Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Now you're very welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown, and the call here with you, and it is game one, week one. Celtic are one game to the good after a 2-0 win against Aberdeen at the weekend. Stephen Welsh, his big head, got on a corner from Matt O'Reilly and stuck it into the back of the net to open Celtic scoring for the 22-23 season, and then a goal in the second half from Jota, and what a goal that was to finish off the game. A wonder strike from Celtic's new-ish signing to kick off the campaign in winning ways. We're going to be looking back at that game in a bit more depth and checking out what was good, what was bad, and what was sort of okay in Celtic's first game of the season. We'll start off with the good. Alan Morrison is with me as always, Celtic by number. Alan, I guess the first good is that Celtic got a win.
Yeah, it was, I think, a nice game for Celtic. I think Aberdeen are a good side, much better shape than they did last season for a start. But they played in a way that was kind of nice for Celtic in the sense that, you know, they didn't press too hard, didn't really press at all, to be honest. They sat back in a sort of medium block. When they did get the ball, they tried to play out, you know, they tried to play from the back, which kind of lasted a couple of passes before they then booted it up the pitch, but which I didn't quite really understand that, to be honest. But it was a nice game for Celtic, and the 32 match unbeaten run now, is it in league games, I think. So I think there were a lot of positives, actually. Obviously the comfort of the result was obviously a little bit in doubt until the second goal. There was a little bit of frustration, I think, creeping in. You need that second goal, I think, against teams like that, and it didn't really come. But I think the main sort of upside for me was just how limited the chances were for Aberdeen. So although not to say there weren't some concerns, in general, they had very few openings really at all. So I think that was a pleasing aspect. And, you know, again, if you think about when we were talking about what do we expect from the season, and I was saying, well, if you look at that side, it's, you know, 11, in fact, apart from Aaron Moy, you know, you've got 15 players there that were there last season. You sort of think, you know, what's new? What I was looking for was how are we improved in terms of individual performances, but also how is the team improved in terms of its coherence and so forth. So that's what I was really looking at. And I think what was particularly, and I'm sure we'll get into the detail in a bit, but just in summary, what was particularly pleasing for me was that, you know, players like Welsh, Taylor and Hatate all looked really strong for the first game. O'Reilly continued his pre-season form as well. And Carter Vickers and Jota basically played exactly as they played last season, which is really good. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's almost like we'd signed some really, really, you know, players that we knew and knew how they're going to perform. So I think all those were kind of positives. And as I say, what I saw as well was again, more evidence of cohesion in terms of the attacking patterns, the attacking intensity. I mean, Aberdeen were just harried to distraction. A lot of the kicking the ball up the pitch was just because they had nowhere else to go. They spent huge amounts of the game without the ball, and then when they got the ball, you know, they were struggling to then, in terms of fatigue and what have you, to then actually do anything with it. So I think all those aspects were the positives in summary, but we can dig into some of the detail on that, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Jocko James is with me as well. James, look, we spoke about Jota in the preseason friendlies and about him signing permanently. Another good is his goal. What a way to kick off the campaign for him, especially since he's coming in as one of the bigger signings for Celtic in terms of his price tag. We knew it was coming, but this isn't exactly scientific, but I always say that Celtic should have a player like Jota in that, a player who gets fans off their feet with moments of brilliance. And I mean, that is a way to kickstart your campaign.
Yeah, that's what I found, because I agree with everything that Alan said. There was a lot of evidence of the cohesion that we've been talking about in kind of moving forward with the style of play. But ironically, the end product resulting from that wasn't quite there. And I think Ange even referenced that in his comments. And the two goals came from basically two moments of individual brilliance. I mean, that was a great header from Welsh to open the scoring. And then, you know, basically it was all Jota one-on-one and then an unbelievable finish. So, you know, if you start putting those two things together, that's when you get kind of the realization of the potential that I think we're all kind of hoping for. But yeah, I actually posted something on it. It was ironic, cause I didn't know. I looked it up cause, I couldn't remember another goal like that he scored. And in league games, that was the first one that he scored for Celtic outside 18 yards. And he had one against Ferencvaros in the Europa League that was, you know, a similarly brilliant finish. So, yeah, hopefully there's more of that to come. But, yeah, it's just amazing when you get to see something like that happen because it's so brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Christie-esque sort of strike from Jota. That's what I heard. I don't know that if that's the correct way to describe it or not.
That's a dual-edged sword, so bite your tongue.
Look, yeah, but just to finish it. Sorry, just to finish on the Jota goal. I mean, this is why we buy players like this. And I know we will talk about how, and Ryan Christie is the best example of this, how shooting from that distance isn't exactly what you would call good game plan or a smart decision making in the long term if you continue to do it. But when we're talking about what Celtic struggled with in the past couple of years, and that's breaking down teams, maybe taking the chances that they should take like they should in against Aberdeen, when you have a player like Jota, he has the capabilities to do something that defies the XG and defies what is quote unquote good practice.
Well, and not all of those shots are created equal, meaning that he was central and he had a clear channel to goal, right? So that's been one of my criticisms of McGregor, which is he gets into those zones, which are decent zones, but then just has a tendency of firing away whether there's five guys right around him or not. And a lot of his shots get blocked as a result. So there's a, you know, a mosaic of, and that's why differentiation in XG models is helpful, because there are some that account for the positioning of those defenders and the positioning of the keeper. And there are those that just measure it based off of where they're shooting from. So actually there was a big disparity on a percentage basis in what the XG of that shot was because of that factor, meaning that he had a clear sight to goal. There really wasn't much of anything in his way taking that shot. And obviously it's a difficult shot. He was kind of shooting across his body. That's what made it so brilliant. And the accuracy of it was amazing. And, you know, their keeper, I think his name's Roos, he looks like a decent, you know, keeper. So it's not like he was beating a small keeper that's, you know, doesn't have a wingspan, that kind of thing, or that he was in a terrible error position or anything. I actually don't have any problem with that shot because of those circumstances. It's more so, you know, when the defenders are, you know, clustered centrally and you need the ball to make, you know, like the magic bullet from the Kennedy assassination, you needed to make a right angle turn in midair to try and get it on goal. That's when they're more problematic.
Mm-hmm. And when it's not the SOS of the Neil Lennon season a couple of years ago. So it's all good. Celtic won this game. And Alan, another good for this. And if you ask Twitter for the answer of who was the man of the match, it was pretty, you know, pretty obvious who they would pick, and that was Greg Taylor. First half performance, really strong. Second half performance, probably not as strong, but man of the match regardless. This was a big game for Greg Taylor, I think, because of the signing of Bernabe and whether he stamps his authority on that left-back position early doors. It seems like Greg Taylor has sort of stood up and answered the questions, especially for the first game of the season. May not continue, but for this first game, he has cemented himself as Celtic's starting left-back.
No, he was really strong. In fact, it was great to see Taylor. He looked just like a really confident player. The positions he was taking up, he was popping up everywhere across the midfield almost and picking up the ball. And then his passing, his range of passing was excellent. You know, in terms of his passing, he was, I think, I might even have been leading it at halftime. I think he sort of tired a little bit and kind of regressed back to a sort of what I'd call a normal Taylor performance in the second half. But that first half, he showed a lot of improvement, really, in terms of his dynamism, his ability to get on the ball. His body shape was excellent. He was turning, he was on the half turn, he was facing forward, and then he was delivering forward with great accuracy. I thought it was a tremendous performance in that respect. In terms of the man of the match, though, there was just no competition. It was Matt O'Riley. There's just no, I don't know why Jota got to actually. Matt O'Riley was like head and shoulders above anyone else on the pitch. He created six chances, I think four or five secondary assists. Now I've started a new toy, right? So a new metric for this season. Something that I've not been doing with the packing data, which I could have done, but it's just a case of not having enough time, really, because it's added another probably 20 minutes to capturing game data, is you can actually measure packing for turnovers and recoveries, right? So if you put a slack pass in midfield and it goes to an opposition player, then how many of your teammates are stranded the wrong side of the ball at that point? Yeah, so that is essentially a turnover pack. So you essentially will lose points for doing that. You'll lose packing points. The other side of it is if Aberdeen kick the ball forward and you intercept it in midfield, like for example, Juranovic did it in the first half quite well a couple of times. How many Aberdeen players are then stranded the wrong side of the ball? You'll get the credit for that. So I started doing that in this game. And, you know, guess who was the best at that? Matt O'Riley, right? I think he had five turnovers. Now, he affected five recoveries, forcing Aberdeen to turn over. He only gave up one turnover himself, and that was the last thing he did before he got taken off and substituted. And he was looking a bit tired at that point. So this is another metric by which Matt O'Riley looks really, really good. And the other side of that metric is that it's probably in a metric that shows what it shows some of Juranovic's strengths as well. I've always struggled to explain why is Juranovic better than Molson, because if you look through the stats, it's really nothing between them. But I think this recoveries and turnovers metric is going to be quite a useful one to explain. So I think Juranovic is a little bit more dynamic. He's quicker. He anticipates things quicker. He moves quicker. And I think he'll be cutting out a lot of opposition passes through midfield more so than Rolston, who's a little bit slower on his feet to respond. So new toy, new metric. It's going to be really interesting. It means that you can, in theory, end up with a negative packing score if you keep giving the ball away. And actually, Hatate, he was kind of the reverse of O'Riley, and he gave up about five turnovers in the first half. Now, he also did a lot of great stuff as well. I mean, he looks fresh, he looks busy, he looks tidy, he's quick on his feet. He's you know, there's a lot of good stuff in there as well. And maybe we'll talk about him in more detail. But in terms of man of the match, for me, it was O'Riley by quite some distance.
Okay. And just to finish off with probably the general good talking points from this game, Celtic had the best defence in the league last year, and there's still a lot of talk about Celtic bringing in potentially more defenders. Do they need another left centre back? Jens has come in. Stephen Welsh, Celtic are batting off transfer requests for him. Stephen Welsh started this game. Celtic were solid in defence again, James. We'll talk about the transition and the counterattacks from Aberdeen later on. But in terms of the back four, it's probably not Celtic's strongest back four, but they were very resolute.
Yeah, and I think that the this is, what isn't controversial amongst the Celtic support, but because everyone's got their favorites and their biases, myself included. And I think there's a serious debate to be had as far as the relative benefits of Welsh's strengths. And we've talked about that more and more about his passing. And I'd be curious what Allen's data had on Welsh in that regard. I'm guessing he's probably right there with Juranovic and O'Reilly, probably a little O'Reilly ahead of everybody because O'Reilly was an outlier in that regard. But his contributions are fairly diverse, meaning that he's, as long as he's functional defensively, and this is the question for me, it's not so much domestically. I think the question is domestically, it's not so much in Europe, because I don't think we have a left center back for the European stage at this point to compete at that level. But relative to competing domestically, does his kind of breadth of contributions and performance, meaning that if he's functional defensively, and less error prone, maybe, because that I think that so far is in the data relative to Starfelt. He's got the upside of the passing, probably a little better. It's close on the ability to carry the ball, and so far he's been a clearly better attacking option on set pieces. I mean, Starfelt, we've talked about, is, you know, kind of in the ire category of been generally useless as far as trying to score from use of the head. So, you know, when you take all of that together, is his value playing at center back, knowing that he's got a, you know, he's still 22 and he's going to make his mistakes defensively. But again, that's, you know, Starfelt hasn't been immune to making his errors as well. You know, is there an argument to be made that he actually does more, particularly against teams that are going to be bunkered? And, you know, Aberdeen wasn't even an extreme example of that on Sunday, although they were, as Alan said, more of a mid block. So, you know, I think it's interesting. I think he's valuable. I think the idea that we would sell him just to sell him, that he can't contribute until we get a true ball playing left-sided, left-footed center back, I actually think he might be the best option that we have in a lot of domestic games to try and help, you know, break down these low blocks that we're going to face. So I agree with Alan. O'Reilly deserved for man of the match, but I think Welsh was right there. Because again, all of the things that he contributed, including the first goal. So he was good across the spectrum kind of in performing. And that's, I kind of bring up that concept a lot, you know, the pervasiveness of performance. And when you do a bunch of things functionally or better on a game to game basis, that's more, a little more resilient for the team. You know, we talked about that last week relative to finishing. And we kind of saw that on Sunday, right? Where neither Giakoumakis nor Kyogo really had, they didn't have a lot of opportunities, but they also didn't finish them. That's normal. Like, strikers have fleeting finishing cycles. And the stuff that Welsh does, I think, are pretty reliable and varied. So there's some benefit to that. So, and he's only 22. I want to stress that again. Like, he can still keep getting better. And that's, I think, the... So I don't think, you know, I mentioned the fact that Toulouse's in form wouldn't be shocking, because Toulouse is reasonably smart, well-run club at this point. And so I think there is a lot to like in seeing how he performs.
Mm-hmm. Would you go along with that, Alan? You probably might have this at hand. In terms of XG, is that something we should start taking into account for Celtic defenders, particularly in domestic games where... You know, Celtic don't concede all that many goals, and they don't concede that many chances. So maybe the goal-scoring defender might be a better option to go for.
Yeah, I mean, you're really looking at tiny differences. So somebody like a Julien might have a 0.1 XG per 90 minutes, whereas somebody like a Starfelt might be 0.04. We're not talking about huge margins. The difference that a defender can make in terms of large marginal gains is that pack passing, that distribution out from the back, especially centre-backs. And you know, Welsh was actually... Taylor led on pack passing for the day, nearly all of it in the first half. So you know, credit for that. He was excellent. And Welsh was second across the 90 minutes. He also had the most number of progressive runs. I know he didn't run forward with the ball with any great pace. He wasn't striding across the field like Ayer used to do. It was quite sedentary the way he was bringing the ball forward, but he covered a lot of distance. He just took the team up pitch well. So that both of those aspects were good. Defensively, he was good. I mean, he did lose his first defensive duel. He's very similar to Starfelt in that regard. They're both a similar height. They're both going to potentially get dominated in the air by big centre-forwards. But that was the only duel he lost all game. So he ended up with an 86% defensive action success rate, which was fine. Carter Vickers was par at 91%. Just normal service resumed there. And yeah, there was the goal threat. So I think it's more that bringing the ball out and cutting through the lines I would look at as defenders adding additional value, as James said there, more than actual kind of goal threat. Because again, you might get an exception like a Julien who's 6'5", 6'6", and incredibly strong and aggressive. But I think your normal centre-back, a good season might be 5 goals and an average season might be 3. It's really not a huge, going to make a huge difference in the grand scheme of things. But no, Welsh was very impressive. And I think, like Taylor, he looked confident in himself. He looked like he belonged there. I'm talking about non-data stuff here, but I think they both look like they've been given a lot of either love or whatever it is, motivation from the manager, and they both look like they believe in themselves. And I think with Welsh, you know, we talked about Toulouse being interested. The benchmark for the cost of a decent young Scottish defender, with the the money that Bassey and Doig and Ramsey have gone for, has gone up significantly. So 3.5 million won't do it, not anywhere near, because that price has just gone up because that's the market.
Yeah. There's a conversation going on in the comments about his height. We're not going into that because we spent enough time last year discussing whether Stephen Welsh was 5'8 or 5'9 or 5'10. But I will say to the Egyptian king who said that Lisandro Martinez, who was signed for Man United, is 5'5", he is not 5'5". He's 5'8". 5'5" centre-backs, I don't think, exist in the modern game. I'm sorry to say. But look, that's the good part of the game. So there was Stephen Welsh as a good performance, Greg Taylor, strong performance at left-back, Matt O'Reilly, you mentioned, and then just in general, the good Celtic play in the build-up. Let's talk a bit about what can be improved or what we've seen as potential weaknesses for this.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Season. James, you've spoken about this already in the preseason stuff, but again, probably a little bit more evident in this game now that we have competitive fixtures to look at. It wasn't a problem against Aberdeen, who didn't create many chances from them, but against better opposition, it may become a problem throughout the season. So talk us through the transition play, the counter-attacks from Aberdeen.
Yeah, there's just a lot of space, and that's really the issue. And it comes down to, I think some of it is just inherent. And I actually wrote a column on this that went out today on the Celtic Way. So this is an issue that was at Marinos when Ange was in Japan. It's, you know, when you do the overloads that he does, he likes to play with, where you've got, you know, both attacking eights on the same side of the field. And then you've got somebody like McGregor, who understandably is making a pass and then making a run. And maybe you're supposed to have one of those attacking eights rotate back, right? So it's very dynamic. It's very fluid. There's a lot of motion and coordinated patterns, as we've been talking about. Well, a couple of things can go wrong there. Somebody cannot fill their rotation. The pass can be intercepted, meaning a bad decision, and or it can be mistimed or just a bad pass. And that leaves just these huge gaps in midfield. And the center backs are, you know, exposed. And if the fullbacks aren't, you know, in their fully inverted positioning, which as we get forward, that inversion tends to be less prominent, I'll say. I mean, it's more fluid, right? So when we're in that buildup phase, when we're breaking out from a press or trying to come out from Hart, for example, you'll see Taylor and Juranovic or Ralston inverted a lot. And then as we get into that kind of final third where we're in possession, there's a lot of movement going on. And with the overloads, that just leaves a lot of space. And if people are fast, I mean, I think the guy's name is Coulson. The one time, he fairly fast. I think he's on loan from Middlesbrough.
He played well, yeah.
Yeah, he had a pretty good game. I agree with Alan. I mean, they seem to have had a pretty good recruitment. Their right back looks like he's pretty athletic. Both of their center backs played really well, actually, for the most part. Stuart McCrory. So I actually think they're going to have a fair shot at third. But he just blew right through, and I actually screenshotted a not dissimilar sequence against Leverkusen when Florian Wirtz did kind of the same thing, right? So that's the difference. You know, when you get into the Champions League, you've got guys like that doing it versus, you know, a good player, decent player at the SPFL level. There was plenty of evidence in the game that when we make these kind of mistakes, I'm not saying anything out of turn, I don't think, because I think that's a large part of why Ange was saying what he was saying in, you know, that late first half period when we were giving the ball away. It's because that is inherent to the way he wants to play. Those transition are going to be risk points for us. That's why I've been critical at times about the profile of players that we've been recruiting, because, you know, you really need to optimize for that. And, a guy like Moyes, one of the screenshots I had showed the sequence. I think it was the first of the counterattacks is when the ball was turned over and they first got into space. It was basically four Aberdeen players against our center backs and kind of in right breaking out from their defensive third into midfield. And by the time the ball was carried into our half, three of our people had sprinted back and blown by their Aberdeen counterparts. Right, to their credit. I mean, between the effort, the speed, the athleticism, and we've got that kind of advantage against teams domestically to a large degree, where, you know, that kind of recovery is going to be more difficult. as you go up against higher quality opponents. So, you know, it's kind of the same thing I had talked about even during the Brown regime, which was, you know, when he would press forward and get mispositioned, leaving those spaces. We got away with it a lot domestically. And so these have been problems that we've had at higher levels of opponents for literally years. It's different this time because in that regime, we weren't really, you know, we weren't getting the payoff, the upside of the risk taking as much as we probably should. Now, I think we're getting that the upside profile part of it right. It's just the question of optimization as far as managing the risk, because I don't think the risk is going away. I think it's inherent. And, you know, even somebody like Ross County, and I talked about last year, they've got the type of athleticism. They don't have the quality, but they've got some, you know, athletic, fast guys that if they get out in space, they can move the ball very quickly. But there just isn't that much of that domestically. There's almost nobody other than theoretically Rangers that has the mix of athleticism and, you know, technical quality, which again, that's debatable, but that even approach that to a degree, like you're going to see against Bodo Glimt or, you know, certainly somebody like a Man City or somebody that we could face in a Champions League.
There's a story about Marcelo Bielsa when he was managing in Argentina. He was managing Newell's at the time. They got to the Copa Libertadores final. Alan, you might be familiar with this. It's in the book of about tactics that we spoke about last year. And they lost the final to Sao Paulo on penalties. And Marcelo Bielsa was absolutely just distraught after it. And they went on to win the league in the end, but he went back to the drawing board. He took over Vélez Sarsfield the following season. But over the course of his break time, he was looking what went wrong in the Copa Libertadores and whether or not he should scrap his game plan altogether, whether or not he should, you know, start over, figure it out better. And what he came to the conclusion was that he didn't have to take less risks. He wanted his team to take more risks, and he hadn't gone far enough. So that led to the development of his game of play. Similar enough to Celtic, I think the solution for this problem, if it's not a double pivot, is Celtic taking more risk with their centre backs. If the fullbacks are inverting and the team is counterattacking against us, if our defensive line is 2 to 3 yards further forward, then they're almost acting as the center defensive midfielders as well to cut out these counterattacks. So you're taking more risk with the center backs. We don't have the pace really to do this, but that's where, if you're not going to play a double pivot, if you're not going to play a defensive midfielder, that's for me the solution to Celtic's counterattacking issues.
Well, I mean, you're absolutely spot on. I mean, that is one of the reasons for inverting the fullbacks is it's actually insurance. So not only are you overloading the midfield and giving opponents problems, I mean, Aberdeen just didn't. I mean, whenever Taylor Juranovic got the ball in the half spaces in midfield, there was nobody near him. They stuck quite rigidly to their shape. And if you've got a team like that, you're just going to have so much fun. What you're trying to do is actually, and actually Aberdeen might have been right, because if you draw them out, then you create space for some of the more skillful guys like Jota and so forth, and Kyogo to filter into. But the other aspect of the inverted fullbacks is the theory is that if you lose the ball, you're actually quite compact in the centre at least. So you'll probably be exposed on the wings, but that's a lot less dangerous than being exposed down the middle. So that's the theory in any case. But listen, you know, James is absolutely right about the risks. And just to give you a couple of actual numbers to frame this conversation in terms of the extent to which Celtic are exposed in this regard is a couple of things. I'll use packing and I'll use XG for breakaway situations. So in the last three seasons before Postecoglou, Celtic were pretty constant in terms of the number of players packed per game. It kind of averaged out between sort of 30 to 37 players packed per game. Under Postecoglou, that went up to just around 60. Okay, so not quite doubled, but Celtic are being bypassed with the ball by opponents almost double what they were the three seasons before Postecoglou. And if you look at how exposed are we to conceding chances on the break, under Brendan Rodgers in the 17-18 season, Celtic were giving up 0.26 XG per 90 minutes from opponents breaking on Celtic. That has risen steadily under Lennon, but under Postecoglou, it's now up to... I'm talking about Europe here. In Europe, it's tripled. We're now conceding 0.81 XG per 90 minutes on the transition. And that is the downside. That is the risk. And I think with modern football being what it is, and the emphasis on transitions and in breaking forward quickly when those transition opportunities do occur, and the best teams in Europe being particularly skilled in this, I do think there's some tears ahead for us in the Champions League, unfortunately, because of that. Because I just don't, even if we improve, which we are doing, we are improving our ability. One of the things I touched on last season, which I saw again on Sunday, was we are being far more cute about tactical fouls. Greg Taylor got caught wrong side, rugby tackled a guy, got a yellow card on halfway. That was a bit of a blatant one, but we're pretty cute at giving away these fouls now, and I think we'll continue to do that. But we just don't have the athleticism in midfield for recovery or in fullback for recovery to completely eradicate those risks, unfortunately. And as I say, the trend is very, very clear. We're massively exposed to counterattacks compared to any season in the last, you want to go back to in the last sort of 5-6 years.
So what is the solution then here? Because in my mind, there's several solutions. It's the centre-backs pushing up a little bit further as option one. Option two is playing a double pivot of some sort and having somebody sit a little bit deeper. And we're talking about Champions League, European football here. We're not talking about against Ross County. And then the third solution is controlling possession a little bit more, take fewer risks in our passing. Can't see that happening under Postecoglou.
No, that was a Rodgers brought in. Yeah, that was a Rodgers. That's why Rodgers tried to exert control, keep the ball, and then they can't score. That was his basic philosophy. We're not going to change. I mean, if you look at what's the best example of teams that play this way? It's probably Liverpool, right? Liverpool are probably the best team in the world in transition, right? And how do they set up? Well, they give their wide players absolute license to get as forward as frequently as possible. And they have three forwards that they don't give a lot of tracking back responsibility to, but they do a power of work off the ball because they press really hard. And what's interesting is that the three central midfielders are not necessarily under a lot of pressure to break beyond the ball, but if they do, then one of them will. It won't be all three. It won't be like Celtic, where you've got two of the number eights. It'll be one of them potentially. And so they have that. So they have quite a solid centre in terms of two centre backs, one of whom happens to be probably one of the best in the world, and then at least two central midfielders. So they've always got a block of four in the middle there to protect the back. And when we talked about I sort of use loose terms around having more athleticism in midfield to counter this, to be able to respond to these transitions. In my mind, I'm thinking about a Naby Keita or a Georgie Wijnaldum type of player, and we got Aaron Moy, who's completely not that type of player. So I don't think we're going to be that much better, unfortunately, because again, Turnbull, Hatate, O'Reilly have got wonderful gifts, but that kind of aggressive counter-pressing coverage is not probably one of them, although O'Reilly does a pretty good job.
Yeah, and just to put some numbers behind this, that I referenced in my column, so I have them handy, Liverpool did stand out, right? So what I try to do is I look for, teams that play in the same neighborhood of aggressive attacking style of play, but also kind of dominate in their domestic leagues to a degree. Just looking for the skew, because that's what I'm looking at. Because, Celtic last year, we only conceded 1.37 counterattacks domestically, right? So that just goes to show how bad a significant chunk of the league is, that we're allowing these spaces to be there and they're just unable to do anything about it. We suffocate them and just crush their ability. So they go long. I mean, that's ultimately what happens, is they bunker and then they go long. They do not have any skill or athleticism to be able to break out the way you saw Aberdeen at least do it to a degree in real estate. Again, in the final third, they really weren't able to do anything with it. But when you, so that's 1.37 last year. And our European campaigns, all of them combined, it averaged out to 3.7. Okay. So basically triple. And Liverpool domestically in the Premier League conceded 3.5. So that puts it into some context. Now, in Ange's first two campaigns in Japan, the second which he won the league, he was at 3.91 and 3.74. Okay. Again, Dynamo Zagreb and Red Star, too, I like to look at because they kind of dominate domestically. They're regular, you know, they're kind of a parallel to us in that regard. Frequently in Europa League and Champions League, kind of on the edges, floating between the two. Zagreb's 1.91 domestically, 2.25 in Europe, and Red Star, I don't have. Red Star's 2.27 and 2.64. So it gives you an idea that not only, you know, it's really weird how much we dominate domestically, particularly given how vulnerable we are in this regard. And then, you know, how kind of an outlier we are. It's really strange, that disparity between domestic and European. So just throw it out because it supports what Alan said. I mean, even within the context of Man City, I mean, Man City's not even close to Liverpool in this regard. No. Liverpool are the kind of big club. Bayern Munich's not really there either. It's like Liverpool and everybody else out of that kind of big five Galacticos type of clubs. And we're even beyond them in Europe, which, again, I think provides some context.
I was just going to join those two stats together just to reinforce the point, right? So what James said, 3.8 counterattacks per 90 minutes from the opposition is generating 1.8 XG per 90 minutes. That means these are very high value chances that we're giving up, just to emphasize that. Mm-hmm. And that's Europa League. This is the Champions League is going to be another level again.
Yeah, for sure. So just to round up this conversation then, transition is definitely somewhere Celtic need to improve on over the next couple of weeks, hopefully. I mean, first game of the season as well. It may well start to tighten up a little bit as the players get fitter, as match days continue on. But as we look forward this weekend, it is the aforementioned Ross County, who are sort of the bully boys on this podcast. If we're trying to think of a team to point out any weaknesses in the Scottish League, Ross County seem to be the name that always come into mind. I guess without being sort of ruthless in terms of what Ross County bring, they lost 2-1 to Hearts opening game of the season. Celtic had it pretty easy against them in a couple of fixtures last year. Are we expecting some more of the same, or what are we expecting this weekend?
Going up there is often a complicated situation. Hopefully it's not quite as bad given that it's in August, but I think you have to give Ross County credit because I think there was some concern that with them losing some players, some prominent players off of their team last year, you know, were they going to be able to kind of continue to play at the level that they were playing? And, you know, they actually pretty much matched Hearts last week in kind of underlying performance levels. So it was one of those coin flip kind of games. I think StatsBomb, what did StatsBomb have it at? It was basically, you know, 163, 134 on non-penalty XG. They're always going to be one of those teams where I see them as dangerous, you know, especially in Dingwall. I mean, it took a last second Ralston header, which, you know, was a huge game at the time. When the league was still, you know, kind of nip and tuck. I'm always nervous when we play up there. To me, it's always one of those kind of games where if you get a day of, you know, finishing that's off a little bit and they nick a goal somehow, that you're just like dying for to score, and it gets later and later and later, and it gets more stressful and stressful and stressful. So, you know, they've been recruiting smartly. I think they've done that again. It looks like they've got good athleticism. So again, it's one of those things that we should absolutely still dominate. It could very easily be a 4-0 kind of game. But I always keep Ross County up there as one that I'm, you know, nervous about, far more so than Aberdeen at home. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I don't like writing off teams or, you know, acting as if Celtic are this superior thing. Celtic have so much more money and budget and players than most of these teams. So the fact that they can even compete is an impressive feat for these teams. But I guess if we're talking about this from a Celtic perspective, Alan, is it too early in the season to start rotating? Like, do you bring in Bernabe to see how he gets on at left back? Do you start Jens and get him some time domestically in the SPFL and get him suited to the system? Or do we continue with the starting lineup and build momentum towards the first Champions League fixtures in, what is it, like 5 weeks now?
Yeah, I mean, well, what history shows is that, you know, Postecoglou doesn't tinker for the sake of it. And I definitely don't think he'll change the back four. And certainly Welsh and Taylor don't deserve to be rotated out by any shape from the last game. So I think it'll be pretty sure it'll be the same back four. What was pleasing about, one of the aspects that was pleasing about Sunday was you looked at the bench and you thought, yep, that's a pretty strong bench. And actually, you know, we're struggling at 1-0. Not struggling, but, you know, the game was still a little bit nervy at 1-0. We were dominating the game. And you can bring on Giakoumakis, and you can bring on Abada, and you can bring on Turnbull. And they all actually contributed quite well. You know, one of the problems that we had on Sunday, the other major downer for Sunday was the quality of the balls into the box. That was really the biggest issue. And I was actually really pleased that Postecoglou, after the game, was disappointed by that aspect, and rightly so. And I think he even picked up on Jota as being one of the, because Jota put in 8 crosses that didn't do anything. Maeda put in 8 crosses that didn't do anything. So they were the worst culprit. 16 out of 26 poor crosses were from those two. So the two wingers really struggled to get the ball, and consequently Kyogo was just completely peripheral. I mean, Giakoumakis had twice as many touches and twice as many shots in 25 minutes as Kyogo did before that. But that shows you, again, against a tiring defence, how good it is to bring someone like him on. Would you kind of drop Kyogo because of that? I wouldn't, because I don't think Kyogo, if no one's giving the ball to him, what's he supposed to do? You know, he's non-stop movement. But it was the wide players actually that were the problem. So, you know, maybe if you were to make a change based on who played well on Sunday, and let's pick a game based purely on that basis, then you might pick put Maeda on the bench, because, you know, his output really wasn't that great. But again, you know, you're probably trying to build confidence. So my expectation is we'll just go in with exactly the same team.
Mm. And if anybody was watching the games on Saturday, particularly the Sky Sports games, you will see that if Celtic improve their crossings, they might have a lot of success against a certain rival in this league based on their first game of the season. But we won't go too deep into that. Any final thoughts on Celtic's win against Aberdeen or Celtic's game against Ross County before we finish up?
No, I'm good.
No, I don't think so. I as I say, generally optimistic. I think, you know, I think sometimes, you know, we get deep into each of the individual games and what have you. And if you take a step back and look at the domestic form, especially in the last, year almost, you know, certainly from the beginning of sort of September, October onwards, and that 32 match unbeaten run, you sort of think, how many of those games could we have lost, really? Not many. You know, we are starting to really dominate teams at home. And, you know, I think there's a huge variety of XG numbers based on different models from that game. But the one that I had, which at least is consistent across many seasons, had it at kind of 2.9 to sort of 0.5. And again, that's a nice sort of 2.3 differential. So that XG differential between Celtic and the opponent was in the ballpark of where I would like it to be, and we won by 2 goals. And but we looked, it wasn't like a fluky performance. Of anything, we should have definitely scored more. It was, you know, Giacomakis's miss was really unexpected towards the end, and 3-0 probably would have been about right. So I think we're in a real groove domestically in terms of consistency. And that's the upside to not having 5 new signings. I mean, we saw last night chucking in 5 new signings, especially if they're a bit younger and expecting miracles. It doesn't happen, you know, especially with an opponent that's got a plan and then executes it quite well. So I guess be careful what you wish for. Be grateful for what you've got, which is a team who are trying to really understand what they're doing and are doing it better. And improving as a group. Now, some of them are going to have ceilings. We know that. You know, we suspect that probably Taylor will have a ceiling that, at a European level, he probably can't break through, as we've said before. But my God, he keeps improving. So prove me wrong. I'd be delighted to look an idiot on that one. So, yeah, enjoy what we have. I think it's great to me. All I ever ask for is to see gradual incremental improvement. And it looks like, you know, for Rolston was an absolute outlier last season in terms of his improvement. But if Taylor and Welsh and Hatate, I'll pick on those three, can show the same levels or anything close to those levels of improvement this season, then, you know, suddenly you've saved yourself £6 million in the transfer market. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. There are a few comments coming in. One from Tomboy asking about Hatate. Thought you would talk about him in more detail. It's a long season. We'll have plenty of time to talk about Hatate. Don't worry about that. We will be talking about Ross County and this weekend's game next week on the show. If you want to get that, you can subscribe to the YouTube channel below. Like the video as well so more people can see them. And you can get the podcast as well on iTunes and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. And if you do want to sort of support the channel, support the Huddle Breakdown this season, then you can download the One Football app using the link in the description below. That's the best way to do it. It helps the channel grow and it helps pay for James and Alan's massive contracts that they got for overperforming on their expectations last season. But until next week, we shall chat to you later. And enjoy the game this weekend. Good luck.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.